The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, it's Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hi, Matt.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
That's not your coffee. Did you say when you came into the room that you were hopped up on coffee?
I am hopped up on coffee.
Oh, okay. But you just don't have any coffee in front of you right now.
No, this is coffee.
Oh.
No, that was an empty cup
that
was sitting here.
Oh, that was a different cup. There's so many coffee cups to keep track of, you know.
I know.
Don't touch
I really, mine. I have been drinking too much coffee of late.
You're very relaxed for drinking a lot of coffee.
Really? This is my hyper state.
Really?
Wow.
What do you think, Matt? You've been around me a lot.
I've been around you a lot. I'd say that I can't tell the difference between...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I really can't. But seriously, is this an espresso? Is it just a regular cup of coffee?
It's just a regular cup of
And you're drinking a lot of
Starbucks.
It lately.
Yes, okay. I am drinking a lot of coffee lately, and I need to stop.
You got to ease off there, Heather.
I will.
You can't just go cold turkey. You'll break your heart. Yeah. No one needs that being done, except for maybe poetically. Professor Dave Chow is here.
Thanks
Pleasure
for
the
that.
College for Creative
for
Studies.
Pleasure, as always.
Nice to see you, Tiger Cat.
Yes. I'm wearing my nice hometown team sweatshirt here. It's nice and warm and fuzzy. So
that's totally cool.
Yeah,
I think sports logos are fun. I'm sure you guys do like something on like branding and,
sports logos
and stuff like that.
Got several students doing that right now.
So. Oh, very cool.
I got one kid redesigning the Pistons logo. Next year, it's their 60th anniversary.
Oh, okay. That's a big
deal.
So
I'm seeing if I, get a job for them up there. Yeah. Hey, you could use some help.
Pistons have the worst logo in the NBA.
Oh, they have
just
one of the
worst. Down.
And he swore up and down he will never, ever revisit the horse or the teal era either.
Oh, my
gosh.
Where's Grant Hill when you need him? Probably. Twisted his ankle. Oh. Professor Dan Maggio is here from the FIRST organization, and he is now Dan, the cookie man. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Matt.
They're wonderful, wonderful cookies that you brought in. Keep us fueled. Who knows if they have caffeine in them?
I don't think so.
Keep them away from Heather.
Yeah,
they go well with coffee.
Folks, this is a program you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump our panel, you can win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win a different kind of one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. We were in the middle of a bunch of questions last time. They were sent in by Tony Wojnar, or Weiner. I'm just very difficult to pronounce, Wojnar. Sounds a little Polish. He's from Livonia. And they're all about a Mr. Henry Ford. Some pretty esoteric things about Henry Ford. Let's see if you guys can pick up where the other group left off. Dr. Edsel Ruddeman, former dean of the School of Pharmacy at Vanderbilt, was a close boyhood friend of Henry. And he began a research partnership with Ford Motor Company in 1927. What raw material did they collaborate on that is still notable in the green community to this day?
Weren't we talking about charcoal briquettes a while back?
Charcoal briquettes, yep.
Could it be hemp?
Not hemp, but you're in the wheelhouse.
Oh,
as
that
I
wheelhouse thing
say.
Again.
Yes.
Biodiesel fuel or something?
Getting closer. So it was a specific crop that he was developing into
soybeans?
Plastics, paints, oils, and steel casting. It was soybeans, yes.
Soybeans.
Once to a publicity stunt, which now I'm thinking about would not include Twitter, Facebook, or anything, you know, multimedia back in the day. Henry Ford wore an entire outfit of clothing made of soy in one way or another to show how versatile it was.
Take that, Lady Gaga.
Yep. You and your meat jacket or whatever, meat suit.
Ford Motor Company owned 12,000 acres supporting soybeans, much of which was grown just north of Fairlane Town Center in Dearborn.
Very
back in the
interesting.
Day. Yes, he was a soy... I believe that is specifically, traditionally, and greenly.
So would he have soy lattes then? Or?
He would have enjoyed that. Soy milk, all that other stuff. But they chose to populate the green roof of the Rouge plant with soybeans, I think, as a mix of both green and tradition, going all the way back to Ford. Ford gave the auto industry the $5 day, the reason I'm talking to you right now. My great-grandfather, Joseph Capone, came over for the $5 day and a five-day work week. On-site worker education, and equal pay for minorities, among other things. What was he trying to do that ultimately, of course, backfired.
Break the $5 day? Was it to make a car that people could afford?
Well, I think that Dave was.
Break the union? Yeah.
Yeah,
break
the union. Didn't want them to incorporate, I think is what. Yeah.
Oh, so he paid them well enough that they didn't have.
That they didn't unionize.
That they didn't gather. It was not until after the bloody Battle of the Overpass in 1937 that nearly everyone in the company, except for Henry, realized. Thank you for the commentary, Tony. That's very funny. Realized that unionization was inevitable. The first Ford UAW contract was 1941. And it was only accepted by Henry when Clara threatened to leave him if he didn't agree.
Way to go, lady. Way to go.
Yeah, well, she had a head on her shoulders. What architect? Yeah, that's true. What architect is very closely associated with Henry Ford?
Albert Kahn.
Albert Kahn designed everything from Ford factories to several Ford family homes. He's credited with being the first to use steel-reinforced concrete and substantial amount of glass to create bright, naturally lighted open-plan layouts.
Wait a minute. He designed one of our buildings. I wish it was that bright.
It's not bright?
No, oh, not at all.
That was his hallmark.
No. Oh.
Which one is it? Which
Argonaut one? Building. Argonaut. The Taubman Center.
Yep.
Oh, oh yeah.
Yep. Oh, it's not, that's a con?
It's not exactly the brightest thing in the world.
That open concept is getting real big these days on HGTV, too.
It's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous, if you ask me.
Let's just take out a wall.
Here's four walls. You can have all the space on the inside.
No privacy.
Where did Henry Ford get the idea for the assembly line? That's kind of a charged question, but in general, where would he have gotten the idea to put something as complicated as an automobile together like that?
Rube Goldberg?
No.
That's a good one.
Oh, wait, it's all the way around.
Yeah,
did he see it in England?
China?
He saw it somewhere where something was happening. I can tell you where he saw it. He saw it in Chicago.
Oh, at the World's No.
Slaughterhouse?
It
was the slaughterhouse. Oh, yeah, meatpacking. Yeah. Yeah.
What was Chicago known for?
You saw the carcasses hooked on a moving line that takes the work to the butchers rather than having to move the butchers to the work. What factory was the earliest successful Ford example of the auto assembly line that set the design for every modern factory after it?
The Paquette.
Here's a hint.
Paquette plant?
Paquette plant?
No. We're just a few hundred feet away from it. Yeah, it's the Highland Park, Michigan plant. Where the assembly line was engineered and piloted, it was later perfected, air quotes or not, when Ford built the immense Dearborn Rouge plant, which has, for the record, if you don't know, since my wife does work at the Henry Ford, have completely rebooted the tour at the Rouge, and it's worth going back and seeing again, since now they're making the aluminum F-150.
Super cool.
Super cool.
Nice.
What was the notable claim for the Ford Rouge plant at the time that no other auto factory could match?
At what time? When it first opened?
When it first opened.
Size?
One car per minute?
Size, car per minute, that's all dependent on a certain industrial process.
To do with the fact that the steel is made on site down there?
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you because they took all raw materials in by train and cars popped out on the other side. It had its own foundry. They made rubber, glass, and everything else they needed to make the cars in the same place.
And coffee, lattes, for the employees.
With soy milk.
With soy milk.
With soy milk.
I remember...
Where does the outsourcing fit in?
Not anywhere there.
No.
I remember, though, my grandfather telling me when I was growing up, he never worked there, but he knew people that did. He worked for Ma Bell, as they used to say, Michigan Bell. That they had more miles of train track within the Ford Rouge plant than the entirety of southeastern Michigan. Because that's how they moved everything when it first opened. Just fascinating. The Model T was the longest running single auto design, selling 15 million units over 19 years until what vehicle beat that record in 1972?
Ford Mustang?
I was going to say the Mustang.
It was not a Ford motor product.
The Corvette.
Not a Corvette.
Camaro? Not the Corvette.
No.
This is the same exact
the
design
VW
you're
Bug.
Saying?
Relatively the same design from 1938 to 1972 as the VW Bug. Yes, 21 million units. And its run ended in 2003 with that new design. What prompted Hank the Deuce, or Henry Ford II, to assume leadership of the Ford Motor Company?
His dad died.
Huh?
Senile.
That's pretty good. No, that's good. Edsel's death, his father, who was Henry's son, and the rise of factions within the company. Grandfather Henry remained stubborn to the idea, as he typically was to any idea that challenged his authority. He acquiesced when Clara threatened to sell her portion of stock.
Way to go, Clara!
In Ford Motor. Oh, wow.
Clara, the power Clara, behind Clara.
I guess, the power. The true power, Clara. She was going to sell her stock.
Did Edsel die of a brain tumor?
Gosh, I can't remember.
I don't recall.
Yeah, it doesn't really make
any
sense.
From what I heard, he was actually a halfway decent guy, but...
Hank the Deuce was.
No, Edsel.
Oh, Edsel. Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Kind of a quiet guy.
Yeah, kind of, but his dad just, like, neutered him pretty much at every step and turn, wasn't it?
Yeah, what if your dad was Henry Ford, you know? How was the Guardian Building in downtown Detroit a part of Ford Motor Company history?
It was agricultural.
Part of the Ford was housed there? Financials was housed there?
It's a financial thing.
Was a car introduced there?
No. Nope.
Special model?
Did they do their banking there?
The Guardian
for credit?
You're very close. A group that included Edsel, so Henry's son, started several banking institutions, and they called their name the Guardian Group, is what they called them. They completed construction of the Guardian Building in 1929. Oops. After the stock market crash, Henry and Edsel bailed out the institution by 1934 that eventually led to the founding of Old Manufacturers National Bank of Detroit, NBD, which is now, anybody?
Comerica
Bank. Yes. Wow. What was the bank the competitor General Motors founded? Actually, I messed that up, and I'll just take the
GMAC?
Bonus question. No, L-I? They called themselves the Old Manufacturers National Bank of Detroit. So GM, to confuse the issue, founded the National Bank of Detroit, the true NBD, which became Chase Bank, which we now have.
Isn't that bad business practice?
It really does sound like it, doesn't it?
Back in the day, I don't think they cared much about that.
It was a little more ruthless back then, I'd say.
Yep. It's like, I'm going to call myself Heather Hill Pasquez because I want to be identified with, you know.
And drink tea.
Oh, yeah, and I'll drink decaf. And,
you radical.
So, profs, I'm sure that you waited with bated breath for the birthday of our fair state. January 26th was Michigan's 178th. Inclusion in the Great Union of the United States of America. So we've got a few questions.
It's just a mere lad compared to Detroit. Or is it a lass?
Quite true. Quite true.
What did you say?
Michigan. It's just a mere lad. But is it a lass?
Oh,
can you tell
lad?
By the orientation of the hand or what?
I can't tell.
Detroit is 313 years old, and Michigan's only 178 years old.
So is the city...
Mere lad. I'd say lad.
Okay.
Male or female?
Speaking of mere lads, who was Michigan's first governor?
Governor Hiram Walker.
I believe. Is it
one of the street names in Detroit?
Not Pingree, is it?
Not Pingree. Pingree.
Romney.
No. Not Cousins. Not James Cousins. No.
Fisher.
This fellow was 22 years old when he took office in 1834.
Woodward. Governor Woodward?
It was not Augustus Woodward, actually.
Blossett.
His name was Stevens T. Mason. His remains are interred under a monument to him in Capitol Square in Detroit. They called him the boy governor for fairly obvious reasons.
They cover that on the tour. I did a walking tour of downtown Detroit, and that was covered on that.
Huh. I want to go on that tour. Can you send me info?
Yeah,
or do I just Google it?
I'll tell you the date.
Nice.
Michigan nearly went to war with another state in the Union, Ohio, over what's called the Toledo Strip. We gave it up, but what did we get instead?
The UP.
The Upper Peninsula. Yes, the deal worked out very well for the Mitten, as the UP gave us lumber and mining, not to mention the incredible Tequamenon Falls.
And
soybeans.
But we gave up Tony Pacos.
Right, we gave up Tony Pacos.
Oh,
and a very weird state line, if you ever have the guts to watch how the states got their shapes. Or
that's a good show.
Yeah, it's a wonderful show, actually. And basically, in a way, the cultural anthropologists tell me it's the root of the rivalry between the University of Michigan and the Ohio State University. Because people from Michigan and Ohio always hate each other after that. Before becoming the Michigan Territory, circa 1805, we were part of a territory named after what present-day state?
Was it Louisiana Purchase?
Was it Connecticut?
No, not that.
We've had this question before.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was Louisiana Purchase, but maybe
no, it wasn't. It was an unusual answer.
The progression was that this whole giganto area of the country was known as the Northwest Territory to start. Then it became named after a state. Then it became the Michigan Territory. Then
Pennsylvania?
It became the state. Nope.
Illinois.
Wasn't Illinois, but
was it Indiana?
Is the Indiana territory? No, that says here.
We had a different question.
Okay,
so it was related.
Yeah, something along that lines.
Mm-hmm. When Michigan became a state, what city was chosen to be its capital?
Detroit.
That was easy.
How many years later did it move to Lansing?
One.
Five?
It was 10.
Oh, okay.
You're all in the same order of magnitude, so I think you're fine.
Technically, isn't 10 like one order of magnitude more than one or five?
You know, what's, you know... What's
Dan, you're the math guy here.
Between friends.
Order of magnitude. That's a good question.
It is a good question.
All right.
Besides the United States,
pardon me,
if we drive by the Detroit Historical Museum, you can figure this out very easily.
It's down the block.
What are the three other countries whose flags have flown over the state of Michigan?
Canada, Britain, and
Iroquois?
No. Well,
is it Indian?
But it's not Native American, no.
Mexico.
French or British?
It says Spain.
Spain.
Oh, it was kind of
Spain.
Close.
Yeah, you were close.
Wow. Oh, okay.
You're close. And that's got to have some long-standing things, because now that I think about it.
Why is that?
With regard to the Detroit Historical Society, that's really more about Detroit, not the state of Michigan. But anyway,
It's a
flags.
Del Taco thing. I don't know. Michigan.
Six flags over Texas, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, three flags over Detroit doesn't sound as well.
So. Yeah, it just doesn't sound that impressive. We got, you know... Dave pushed around six times.
Dave has a very good sense of humor.
He does. Down the block from the Historical Museum.
I'm serious. You have a very good sense of humor.
I have to be. You have to see people I teach.
It's not a criticism.
How many, I'm trying to think, how many native Detroiters do we have in the room? I would say that I am.
You are.
Dan?
I am not. I was born in Pennsylvania.
You were born in Pennsylvania.
Yes. New York.
And you were born in?
New Hampshire.
I'm in
New Hampshire.
Where in New Hampshire?
I was born in Lebanon, New Hampshire.
Oh, nice. New Hampshire. Okay.
My organization is based in Manchester.
We're going to check
out. So it's near where Dartmouth is.
We're going to check out the map to find where Lebanon is while we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Indeed, that's right. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, in fact, the very chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, pleasure to be here, as always.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
George, are you saved?
What makes you think that's any of your business?
You're good.
Now, see?
I'm
telling you how the pros handle
it. It paralyzes all powers of retort.
It does.
Do it, George.
That's right. Bang. That's it.
How to handle bad questions.
What I got.
That's good.
And that voice you just heard, sitting to George's right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Directress, I guess that's the right word,
Whoa.
Isn't it? Or, well, the person who runs the Learning Center.
Top chick.
Top chick.
Top chick. There we go.
Professor Kathy Bush.
Hello, Edwin.
Hello, Kathy.
Tough chick, too.
Yeah, well.
No, but, you know, there is a story that reminded me of that exchange with Kathy. That Dwight L. Moody was a big revivalist.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Bible college.
Yeah. Late 19th century. And he did walk up to a person on the street and asked him if he was saved one time. And the man said, "It's none of your business." And he said, "Oh, yes, it is." And the man said to him, "You must be Dwight L. Moody."
That's good.
Oh, dear. That's wonderful.
And we're back, and we seem in the break to have absorbed a new panelist, which is fantastic. Alice Aratoff, 2010 graduate at the University of Detroit Mercy, from both my left, Communication Studies, and my right, English. We're glad to have you here.
And, thank you.
And
Women's and Gender Studies.
Oh, and WGS. Very cool.
She's cool.
She's
a 3-4.
Even though I may not have ever met you before, Alice, since I'm a former editor-in-chief of the Varsity News, we have some sort of kindred spirit there from across the airwaves or typeface or
paper waves.
Yeah. One of
paper
us.
Waves.
And I've read the newspaper from
time to
time.
You know, that reminds me of something, Matthew.
What's that?
A former president of this university at one point told me about a certain meeting in that said president's office regarding your tenure at the VN.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we're going to have to talk about that.
I keep forgetting to bring that up with you.
Oh, my.
We were having lunch one day.
It couldn't be good. I can tell you that.
Right? Yeah, what'd you do, man?
There were some issues.
He got sort of called in.
Yeah.
Mm. What?
This isn't a Ken Hennold thing, is it?
Wait, is this like all the president's men here? What's going on? is there a recording
I'm
device
sorry,
you
I
don't
just,
know?
I,
sounds
I just,
like an article for a future Varsity News.
It does.
We'll see how that works.
Call in the investigators.
Former president called him in.
Mm-hmm.
This is when you were the student? A student?
Yes.
A student, and you're the VN.
And I've known about this for a while now, and I just keep forgetting to Use it.
What'd you do? What'd you write? I want to know.
It was because I was editor-in-chief. It was something else that had appeared in the newspaper that was causing quite a stir.
This was Sister Faye.
I'm assuming it was
she was fond of Sister not liking Maureen. Things and letting people know that.
Yeah.
We got in trouble on the radio show. Edwin did.
Did he?
Yes. Because of things that he would say. He would mock the university. So
University of Detroit.
I don't remember what. I just remember the president had let it be known that she was not happy.
Oh. Well, I don't want to stir too much up here because I think maybe she was correct in calling you in.
She was smart.
Would make an interesting WGS piece.
Oh, well, now we definitely have to connect after the show. All right.
Sorry, Matthew.
That's all right. Alice, we have questions about the 178th anniversary of Michigan's joining the United States of America.
Okay.
So
you know, history is not my major.
It's okay.
Not as far as
none of ours either.
Yeah,
I was going to say, like, we know any better.
Where does the name or what does the name Michigan mean? Where does it come from?
Michigama?
Ish?
Isn't it? Was it?
A combination of Indian tribe names?
Something
like
that. It is not. It is an actual word.
Michigama?
Yeah.
An Indian word?
Or Gichigama, I think is the Anishinaabe.
Oh, the big lake
call
Gichigumi is Lake Superior.
Right. But so their nickname for Superior was Big Lake. So that is one part of what we're talking about here.
Big Lake State.
No.
Big
otherwise
stinking
we'd be
lake.
Gichigumi State.
Yeah.
Big Goonish Lake.
Gichi or Mishi means big. Gan or Gama means water. So big water, I think that just about fits the
bill. Okay, sure.
Nice.
Heather doesn't like it, but that's okay.
I'm trying to get past the reference to Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Saying it is.
Hey, he's a Canadian.
Darn it, I'm finding it amusing.
In a musty old hall had too much in coffee. Detroit, they prayed.
What, because I think Dave is funny?
Hey, leave my looks out of this.
So, you know, Minnesota brags all the time that they're the land of 10,000 lakes. It's basically their unofficial branding. But Michigan has how many inland lakes?
10,001.
17,032.
No, we have over 11,000 inland lakes.
That's
so much
like
so.
That
ours
anybody,
go to 11.
Anybody from the state of Michigan knows you are never, no matter where you are standing in the state's borders, how far from any large body of water.
Define large, because some of the lakes
are... Any river or lake.
Oh, any river or lake. Oh.
10 miles?
80 miles.
Three.
You're never less than 6 miles away.
Six?
Seriously?
Waterway. Wow.
Yep. That is how much we have.
You should
in the
see
land
what my
of
basement
water.
Like. A couple months ago.
That brought it down to 5 miles.
But that's about 3 steps away.
So are they counting all the little ponds and puddles?
I think so.
Even if they are, it makes sense.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I mean, how far away are we from the river right now? 6 miles, right?
6 miles.
So, okay, well, hold on. What about those of us in Berkeley? How far are we away from?
What about Lake Berkeley and Roseland Park Cemetery? Oh, they filled,
they filled that in. Oh, what is our nearest body of water, man?
That is a good question. Quarton Lake up
Quarton
in Birmingham.
16 mile? Okay,
yep.
All right.
Quarton
fine,
Lake.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm going to count like the pond over the zoo or something like that. So
yeah, it's a body of water.
The polar bear habitat.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
right. The polar bear habitat.
I thought if you can't water ski on it, it shouldn't be called a lake.
It probably isn't a lake. Yeah,
that's a fair.
Obviously, profs, we're known for our water, not our mountains. Do you know what the highest peak in the state of Michigan is?
Do buildings count?
It's like Woodward and 18
Mount miles. Clemens and Mount Pleasant don't count.
I was
going to
say
so.
The Picture Rock.
The I-75 overpass.
No, but
it's up
It's up north. we're actually talking about Baraga County. So
Boyne Mountain.
Sort of think about that. It's not Boyne. No.
It's in the Upper Peninsula.
I don't know where Baraga County is. Oh, great. Afraid, and yeah.
Don't know.
It says the name is Mount Arvon, and just for a chance to compare, it's 1,979 feet high. By comparison, the highest point in the United States is Mount McKinley in Alaska at over 20,000 feet.
Don't let Beth hear that. She's going to give us a lecture on West Coast mountains.
That's right. We do not really have any mountains in the state of Michigan. Maybe the Iron Range. But not much beyond that.
Boyne and Alpine Valley just doesn't count.
So. Alpine Valley, this is not about.
DTE is skiing too.
And nobody even said Mount Holly. I was sure someone was going to say Mount Holly.
Isn't that a trash dump? Which one is the...
Mount Holly's a dump.
It is a dump.
It used to be. Yeah. It's a giant pile of trash that you can ski on. Many Michiganders have sought the White House, but only two major party candidates have succeeded in winning party nominations. Name them.
Not Gerald Ford.
Romney.
Well, Gerald Ford technically ran in 76 and lost to Carter.
Okay, so then Ford. Romney would be the other one?
Well, you know, Romney would be up for debate because he was born and raised in Mexico. So that's a different
Mexico?
Story.
He was?
Really?
Yes. Was he born
in Mexico?
He
couldn't have been born in Mexico.
They didn't, he has to be a natural born citizen. Yeah. President.
Wait, get the birthers out.
Well, but he was born to American parents in Mexico. Oh. So I think that changed things a little bit.
So what is Ford?
He didn't seem to make an issue out of that.
Ford lost to Carter in 1976. Somebody lost to Zachary Taylor in 1848. Oh. Where's Roy when you need him, you know?
Yeah.
And you should know this one, by the way. It's probably one of the most famous late 1800s personalities in the state
is it
of
from
Michigan.
A governor, is it governor of Michigan?
Yeah, I believe he was governor
it's
at some
Millen,
point.
It's not Milliken.
Not Milliken.
Powell?
Nope. Polk? There is a street in Berkeley, very close to where Dave and I
Coolidge?
Live, named after.
West.
Coolidge nope. is from Vermont. I don't
know. Mortensen?
What'd you say?
His name is Lewis Cass. Is
oh,
his name.
Cass.
Lewis
He's
Cass.
He's pretty famous. He has his own corridor.
Yeah, he has his own corridor. Yeah. He has his own restaurant.
High school, too. Yeah.
Yes, Cass.
He had a corridor. That's it.
A couple years ago, during our Geek Week treasure hunt on campus, I hid tokens at Lewis Cass' grave down in Elmwood Cemetery and said, you know, I ran for president in 1848 and lost. Where am I now? And people had to go raid the cemetery to get the
And did they?
Token.
And
they did, yeah.
And they knocked over the headstone and Mance
That was another conversation with the president.
It's a little known fact that Cass's daughter was named Corridor.
Corridor Cass. Okay, so graphically,
Corey, for sure.
All the people listening, it makes sense. That's Baraga County. So that's the Iron Mount.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's
wow.
way, way west. I hope
behind Minnesota. The bunny rabbit ears.
Yes, exactly. Last question. Everybody knows what a tuber is. I hope you do. It's
potato.
A tater. But what on earth is tubor that's on Michigan's state flag and emblem?
I've heard this one before, too. And I know there's
is it a crown?
Tubor Gold was an old Danish beer that they used to advertise.
Oh, really? Yep. Okay. Well, that actually makes sense.
Is it a stein? Is it like a... No.
No, it's just Michigan is a weird place. We have three state mottos.
Mm-hmm.
It's
if you
nuts.
Seek a pleasant tuber... Oh, no, wait a minute. No,
how do you spell this
dig
tuber?
Around you.
T-U-B-O-R.
T-U-E-B-O-R.
Oh, there's
tubor.
An E.
There's an E.
We have this. We have seek a pleasant... If you seek a pleasant peninsula, look about you. Yeah. And then... What's the third one? Oh, my wife's going to
kill me. Pure Michigan?
No. Tubor means I will defend.
Hmm.
And that's nice and very poetic, but we basically have the worst state flag of all 50 states.
It's pretty boring.
Let's just take our emblem and put it on a blue flag.
Boring.
And that's it. Very boring. Reflected in our the boringness of our quarter a few years ago as
and
well.
And what do we have to really defend against?
Ohioans.
Invasion
Bells.
By Canada, and
Bells.
You know it. I'm afraid we're going to have to say goodbye, Professor Roach.
Goodbye, Professor Roach.
Goodbye, Professor Maggio.
Goodbye, Professor Roach.
Goodbye, Professor Aratov.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Professor Chow.
See ya.
See you later, Professor Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.